On behalf of RSA and Carisoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast, Fireside Chat with Deputy Director Nitin Natarajan and the Coalition for City CISOs. Co-chairs for the Coalition of City CISOs, Greg McCarthy and Michael Maxtman, will continue the discussion with Deputy Director Nitin Natarajan around cybersecurity and the importance of the public sector.
Today, we're joined for this fireside chat by myself, Greg McCarthy, the Chief Information Security Officer for the City of Boston, and co-founder and co-chair of the Coalition of City CISOs, as well as Michael Maxim, the CISO for the City and County of San Francisco, and my fellow co-founder and co-chair for this Coalition of City CISOs. So thank you again for that wonderful keynote, Deputy Director, and we'll jump right into some questions. As Mike introduced you for this keynote, he had mentioned about your roles in federal, state, and local government throughout your career. Having joined CISA recently within the last 3 months, have you seen any surprises since beginning this new role?
So I think the two things that surprised me coming to CISA after, I was in federal service, left federal service and came back, I think it's kind of twofold. One is the progress that's been made in the partnerships. As we look at kind of the evolution of the collaboration with federal, state, local, tribal, territorial partners and with the private sector has changed significantly. It's been evolved. Again, having worked with CISA's predecessor for 15 years, it's been interesting to watch kind of the infancy of that engagement, and we look at kind of the transition into this cybersecurity space and how that engagement was, 8 to 10 years ago, and where we are today is significantly different. So it's great to kind of be back and to see that kind of leapfrog in collaboration that can only be done in collaboration with all of our partners out there. I think the second part of it that's been very surprising to me is the advanced evolution of our adversaries and the threat that we're facing. I think that as we look at historically, when we've looked at kind of cybersecurity, right, and we looked at who was worried about it, who was preparing for it, who were really the actors that were concerned, that doesn't exist anymore, right? Everybody needs to be worried about this. Everybody needs to be concerned about this. I jokingly tell people that, when I was in government and you'd hear about the cyber incidents around the world on a daily basis, you realize kind of how horrible the world can be in the cybersecurity space. And then you leave and the world's great again, right? I mean, everything is great. Everything is happy. These things clearly are not happening just because I'm not hearing about them. And then you come back into government and you hear about how much has evolved, again, kind of both in the relationship side, which is helpful, but also what's evolved with our adversaries and the challenges that we're facing there. And I think that, it's a stark realism that we've done a lot, but we have a lot more we need to do. Both domestically and internationally. And I'm excited to be able to do that together with partners throughout the globe to again, continue to fight this fight.
Thank you for that. Things that surprised you. Thank you for coming back to federal service. We appreciate you at CISA. Of course, appreciate you being here. I think for us as local government leaders, it's gratifying to know that as a former city government first responder, you are keenly aware of the nature of city services and how critical they are to the constituents. We formed a coalition specifically around the understanding that cyber disruption in city is one of the major risks, major disruptions to the day-to-day lives of our residents, of visitors, of people who work and live in our cities. What is your vision, given your background in local government, of how CISA can collaborate with cities and local government as we work for the collective defense, which you term a whole nation defense against cyber criminal organizations?
So I think a lot of it comes down to establishing that common vision, right? How do we collaborate together in order to take on this kind of common adversary? I think it's important to know where we're rowing in the same direction. I think it's also important to know where we're not, right? I think there are going to be times as we tackle this fight that state and local governments and cities and the federal government may not be in line with one another, right? I think, and I've experienced that when I was on the on the local government side, on the city side, where there were times we didn't quite understand why the federal government was going in the direction it did. I think there were times that by increasing and enhancing our information sharing, we were able to to marry that up, right? For us to understand what the federal government was seeing and challenges they were facing, and that at times aligned us. I think there were times just based on the fact that every city is different, every city is unique, and the federal government has a different perspective and different mission. There are times that we might have been slightly divergent. And I think, you know, people see divergence as a bad thing at times. I think knowing that we're divergent is a good thing. I think knowing that at times that we are going in potentially separate directions because of factors and challenges that, you know, are unique to that city or to that state or that jurisdiction is important to know as well. I think that while we all want to be in kind of going the same direction, knowing others are veering off and not knowing they're veering off is harmful. So I think getting together with a common vision the best we can is helpful. And I think if we are diverting or where there are areas of divergence, identifying those, having those discussions head on so that we can kind of defend against the urgent threats and hazards that we're facing today, but also that we can work collaboratively to really look at those long-term risks, right? How do we look to identify and strengthen the infrastructure in the long term? How do we build that capacity? How do we build that collaborative planning? And how do we make those changes kind of in the broader ecosystem of what we're facing as we tackle the new innovations, as we continue to grow, as we build new infrastructure, with kind of security on our minds up front, right? And how do we build that resilience into what we're doing, both from a cyber perspective and a physical perspective as we move ahead?
Now, that's a mission that we can embrace, closer collaboration with CISA, shared understanding. What challenges do you see right now in front of you that can put a little bit of a pause in that vision and mission? And how can we, as city CISOs, local government cybersecurity leaders, support you in overcoming the challenges and getting to the vision that you've outlined?
Sure. So I think a lot of it comes down to sustained investment, right? I think that the funding that we received, and we appreciate Congress's support with the American Rescue Act, has been helpful in kind of setting that down payment on where we need to go and how we need to grow. But how do we look at that sustained investment? I think that when we look at our response over decades to a lot of different types of natural disasters, we tend to be responsive, right? And to these types of things. But how do we build that into sustainment? How do we sustain the resources that we need to continue this? We know there's no silver bullet, right? There's no magical dome that we can put over the internet to protect it. There's no switch we can turn it off when we think we're under attack, right? We have no kind of magical system that's going to allow us to solve this. There's no single tool out there that's going to allow us to solve this. So we really need to be able to develop those commitments collaboratively over time to build those investments. You know, we appreciate Congress's commitment to us to date and helping us, build the foundation that we have. And we're looking forward to working with them as we move forward to kind of continuing to grow on that. But how do we do that on all levels of government, right? The federal government has a role to play and support that we can provide. But how do we help build that into the requests and the efforts that our partners are having, especially at the local and city level? We want our partners to continue to collaborate with us. You know, we've made a lot of progress over the last few years with partnership structures, frameworks, with the MSISAC. But we also want to make sure we're moving in the right direction. We want to make sure that the challenges that we're looking to tackle, the resources that we're bringing to bear, are actually helping you and actually serving those needs. I think the worst thing we could do is just go off on all of these great ideas and that it might be moving in a direction that isn't of value. Again, how do we look at this from your lens and how do we make sure that we're providing value as we tap into resources and capabilities that the federal government has, things like national laboratories and other vehicles that we can use to help drive this effort? How do we make sure that the outputs of those efforts are truly helping move the needle at the local level? How do we know that they're guiding decision-making and informing your decisions that you're making on the local level? As you're looking at the challenges that you're facing when it comes to funding and resourcing and strategies on a local level, are we providing the right information to help build your argument and what you need to do as you continue forward? So I think all of those types of things are going to be key as we try to grow CISA and mature as an organization amongst ourselves, but making sure we're doing it in a way that is providing the most value to our partners.
That does help us. And we're here, of course, interested in that, in a further conversation, in further supporting the vision, getting closer and getting feedback from us. That sounds, it definitely resonates with me.
Yeah, I would definitely echo Mike's comments. We are excited to partner with CISA. We are excited to provide feedback and input from our local government perspective. So we're excited to continue that partnership. So you touched on this a bit as far as funding. So it obviously takes money to implement a lot of these changes, whether it's a patch management process, whether it's backups and secure backups, security awareness, third-party management. So we are very happy that CISA, I believe, had a huge hand in pushing for the UASI funding to allocate 7.5% of the UASI funding that was granted to municipalities to cyber initiatives. But traditionally, the way that the funding cycle comes down to local governments is from the federal government to the states, then down to the local government. So there's everybody gets a little piece of the pie, if you will. So do you anticipate any additional funding sources besides UASI that would be coming potentially directly to local governments? And we'd be excited to hear what those funding initiatives are and how they directly will support cyber initiatives.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, I wish I had the magic checkbook, which I haven't found yet. It's been about 3 months. I keep looking for it. I've opened almost every drawer here in the building trying to find that magic checkbook. Still looking for it. But I, in all seriousness, I think that, you know, we know that state and local governments are on the front lines of this, right? We recognize that resources are needed to do this. We recognize it's an uphill battle to essentially kind of sell cybersecurity, right, within the construct of a lot of the cities that are out there. I think we've gotten a lot better in people's understanding of the challenges and the impacts of a cyber attack. I think as I looked 20 years ago when I was in the healthcare industry and we were looking at kind of selling cybersecurity within an institution, you know, the response was just sit in the basement, keep the IT, keep the BlackBerry on, we're fine, right? We don't have to worry about it. So I think we've come a long way in kind of helping people to understand the risks, the threats, for people to understand both the monetary and non-monetary impacts of a cyber attack as it has on a jurisdiction of any size. So I think that we've come a long way in that. I think that, you know, we've done some work directly at the local level. I think election security is one example of work that we've done over the last couple of years where we've kind of targeted directly working with local jurisdictions and how we can strengthen that. We also know, as you mentioned, kind of the utilization of the UASI allocation that the secretary has been very vocal about and supporting is, you know, is not new money, right? It's kind of ensuring we're utilizing what's already there and how do we do that. I think, you know, we want to continue to help local governments continue to expand and grow. I think the other in their capabilities as they deal with this, I think the other challenge is how do we do it in a way that doesn't become an administrative burden, right? So as we look at the evolution of grants, and listen, I was a federal grantee, right? So I've been on the receiving end of this. And so it's one thing to be one of those UASI grantees and how do you kind of look at how much the state can keep? And as you said, how much goes out to the local side versus kind of releasing thousands of local grants, right? I mean, the infrastructure needed to manage that on the federal side would be significant. And then the administrative burden on the local side is significant, right? I mean, anyone who's worked with a lot of any type of federal grant, I'm not just talking about UASI, any type of federal grant across any federal department or agency knows there's a lot of reporting requirements, there's a lot of mandates, a lot of tracking financially, programmatically. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that we're talking through is how do we get the best value for the dollar of investment, right? So if we look at funding, what is the most effective way to fund it that has the biggest impact at the local level, right, on the ground, really where, as they say, where the rubber meets the road or whatever kind of horrible analogy we've all heard too many times we want to use. But I really think, to me, one of the things that's foremost in my mind, having been a grantee, is how do we minimize that administrative burden? How do we do it in a way that doesn't say, we're going to give you $5, but we're going to have you do $15 worth of administrative work for those $5, right? And at that point, it just, you know, I don't want the money, right? Just kind of keep the money because it's more of a burden to do that. We saw this with grants in the early 2000s when a lot of the federal grants first started to come out. You know, I remember they came to our facility and said, we're going to give you $10,000 and we want $50,000 worth of work, right? So I think as we look at this, that's something that we're looking at as we try to identify how do we get the money on the ground for folks to be utilized most effectively? How do we maintain that balance with the administrative burden that has to be there, right? We need the checks and balances. I say it's a burden, but not, it's necessary, right? We need to have effective checks and balances in these systems. So those are some of the things that we're thinking through. And then obviously, you know, working with Congress to see what options exist out there in future years.
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, for those of us who participate in UIC, we are very grateful that the UIC actually takes a lot of that administrative burden on, and they do the reporting and they do the management. And that's actually been an effective way to participate. And of course, we'd love for you to find that magic checkbook someday. We also have been very interested in actually seeing the evolution of the mission for CISA with the latest conversations about more direct operational responsibilities around the federal civilian agencies. And we wonder if there is a future vision to extend potentially that operational capabilities beyond federal civilian agencies to some of the major cities, metropolitan areas, so we can benefit of major investments, major innovation that CISA might bring to federal civilian agencies.
Definitely. So I think some of this is through our regional footprint, right? Through the expansion of regional staff and making sure that we have people in the cities and the towns throughout the nation that can directly interface with all of you. I think that, you know, not everything should be based out of DC, right? I mean, a lot of good things happen from DC, but not everything happens from DC, right? So how do we make sure that we are truly in the communities that are being impacted? How do we have staff that have the ability to build that relationship over time, right? We're not just flying in from DC to have one meeting or to have one exercise or conduct a training session or what have you, and then we fly back, right? But people who are residing within your communities that you can build that trusted relationship with over time, how do we then take the programs that we have on information sharing, on risk management, on those types of things, and have them available to you on a local level to more and more jurisdictions as they learn about it? Some of it is us almost kind of doing marketing, right? Making sure people understand the resources that we have out there, that people know what capabilities and offerings we have to our local partners. And it's going to vary, right? Some cities are much more robust than others. I mean, if you look at a Boston and a San Francisco, you know, that are much larger cities versus smaller cities, how are we able to maintain services and capabilities that are applicable to large cities that have different needs than smaller cities that may be kind of more immature in their infrastructure or starting to develop that maturity in their infrastructure? I think the other big element is the .gov, right? As folks are aware, the .gov recently transitioned from GSA over to us. And we encourage folks to transition to the .gov domain because there's inherent security practices and benefits that come with that. We are working to make that more accessible to partners out there. But we know that kind of encouraging folks to go to the .gov registration site, to look at transitioning your domains to .gov in the long term as well, is another avenue that we want to continue to promote as another way that we can help support local governments.
Appreciate that. And that .gov transition is actually very exciting. We're looking to learn more and leverage it even more.
Great.
So we touched on this around funding. We really are excited about the services that CISA provides. Boston takes part in a lot of the free services that you provide to local governments. The expansion of the Cyber Advisors program. So it was, I think, 7 or 10 or so nationally. Now there's, I believe, 1 per state, moving towards 1 per state. So that's really amazing. We have an amazing cyber advisor here in Massachusetts. So we love partnering with them and working with them. So do you see the vision of that program growing? I know some of the things that we've done in Massachusetts with UASI funding was a regional liaison for the UASI region, the Metro Boston Homeland Security region. Do you see potential expansion to a cyber advisor per UASI region or something like that?
So right now we're at 20, happy to report, 20 of the state cyber coordinators. We do want to expand that out to a total of 56 right now is what we're looking at. But again, you know, there to me, they're kind of small S state, not big S state, right? In the sense that we want them to collaborate with everybody within that jurisdiction. So if there are regional coalitions that have been formed, either by the UASI or by others, we know that there's regional coalitions that have stood up, outside the UASI structure. We want those resources to be available to our cyber coordinators and for them to work collaboratively with those entities. But the state cyber coordinators are one touch point, almost like an entry point, right? They're the gateway into the broader CISAR architecture. So in addition to that one individual, you know, he or she behind them has cybersecurity advisors, physical protective security advisors, the chemical inspectors. We have external affairs folks that we're building out in the regions, training and exercise support in the regions, in addition to the reach back into big CISA here in DC, where we can tap into all the divisions of the work that we have here. So I think that while right now our target is 56 and we're at 20 and continuing to grow, the reach back and capability and that depth of support is what's going to be valuable in kind of providing those resources. A lot of it is making sure that folks are aware of what capabilities and tools and offerings that we even have, right? How do we make sure that word is getting out effectively? So it's not, we don't want them necessarily working just with the state entity, but how are they working with the cities, with the towns, with the counties, with the other jurisdictions within that state as they do that? Now, there's thousands of towns and cities across the nation, and there's one, right, per state. So it's going to take a little bit of time to build that relationship. But I think, as you mentioned, the creation of these regional coalitions, the creation of committees and resources within states that are focused on things like cybersecurity are going to allow us to have that kind of one-to-many contact, right? It's going to allow us to attend your weekly, monthly, quarterly meeting and be able to reach that broader audience as opposed to those one-to-one relationships, right? And then being able to reach back into the organization. So we do want to continue to grow. I think we want to continue to grow that regional footprint and be able to have more support out in the field so that they can more directly, again, kind of build that relationship and provide those services as we move forward. What that exact number is as we move ahead, we'll see. But I think, you know, we are committed to making sure that we're providing those capabilities and services at your site, not necessarily at ours, right? Not everyone's going to come to you.
And if I'm a local government that's listening to this this session, and I don't know who my state liaison is, how would I go about finding who that person is, or how would I find out how to contact that person?
So we have information on CISA.gov if folks want to go to the website. There's also a contact information on the website. If folks have any questions about anything and everything related to CISA, we have that entry point on the website as well. And then let us track it down, right? I mean, one of the things I've been a firm advocate of since I came to, when I was in the city side, I would look at the federal government and right, they would have 50 people doing what I had like a fifth of a person doing, right? And you sit there, you struggle, like, I don't know your different divisions. I don't know how you're structured. I don't know the 800 different elements of the organization. I don't want you to. I don't want you to sit down and try to figure us out, right? So go to the website. There's a way to reach us and let us do that, right? Let us track it down internally. Let us get the right point of contact to reach back out to you. It's a full-time job and a half for you to understand the federal bureaucracy. Let us handle that for you. Get us the information and we'll make sure that folks reach back out to you.
Fantastic. I'm sure many people will appreciate that helpful information.
Yeah, and I certainly encourage people to visit the website. It's been useful to me, and it's been a pleasure meeting my advisor and coordinator as well recently. We're looking at those services because the services keep evolving, and that's the exciting piece. Deputy Director, you mentioned that beyond the services, one of your goals is increased transparency, more information sharing. How do you see that evolving? How can we really help make a shared decision-making model develop with CISA, you know, especially around kind of larger metropolitan areas, a larger coalition of city security professionals?
So I think a lot of it is that collaboration and information sharing, right? To me, as I've looked at information sharing over the years, it's been about the right information to the right people in a timely manner that results in more informed decision making. And even if the decision remains the same, right, the decision is more informed by kind of the broader ecosystem of information that we have. So as we look at this, I think a lot of that is that information sharing back and forth, is that the efficacy of information sharing, right? Are we producing the right information in a timely manner that helps you in what you're doing, right? I don't want to sit here in DC and just have people sending reports out, right? If they're not being utilized, if they're not helpful, that's not success to me, right? It's a good measure and metric. I think it's a bad measure and metric. You know, to me, it's how do we make sure that we're having that dialogue? How are we collaborating and having that feedback into what's useful? As we look at information sharing, say along the intelligence ring, right? It's not about sharing that intelligence and saying, this is what we're seeing with threat actors. This is what we're seeing out there. What I want to hear back is, what are you doing with it? How is this changing your actions? How is this driving your decision-making? How is this driving your ability to advocate for the investments within cybersecurity within your organizations? Is it the right information, right? Is it being presented in the right manner? Do we need to do more outreach to CEOs and senior elected officials who may not be as well-versed in the technical details so that they can understand that broader landscape? Having that type of feedback in what we're doing, I think, is going to be critical to ensuring that we can tackle this adversary together. Again, we're not going to solve it purely as the federal government. We need to do it in a collaborative way. And the only way to do that is to have that constructive feedback in what we're doing and to make sure that it's working. And we're committed to continually striving to improve our products, to improve our offerings, to improve our training, to improve our exercises that we're doing with folks out there, so we could drive to those decisions in a collaborative way and we can have the right input as we move ahead.
That makes perfect sense, and I'm excited by that vision. At a personal level, I would say that the emergency directives and the clarity of the emergency directives, as well as the tools that accompany them, have been very helpful. I've seen that the number of them unfortunately increase, but at the same time, we're taking advantage of that. So we do encourage, and you know, we want to continue that information sharing, providing feedback in terms of what works and what doesn't. And we're seeing a lot of things that are new that are coming out from CISO that are really helpful to us in the local government space. Thank you.
Yeah, I would echo what Mike had said. The SolarWinds products, the Microsoft products, the Pulse products that you guys have put out have been extremely beneficial for both our municipality and other municipalities around the state. So if you had a crystal ball and you were to look 10 years ahead where you get your magic checkbook and the relationship between local government and CISA, where do you see that in 10 years, or where do you hope to see that in 10 years in your ideal utopian vision?
So I think, you know, first I just want to say I appreciate the feedback on the emergency directives. I think that, you know, as we issue them for the federal departments and agencies, you know, we hope that they're of value kind of beyond that domain space. So it's always good to hear feedback that, you know, we're writing them in a way that does provide value and support out there. So, and we'll continue to do so. As we look kind of 10 years from now, what does it look like? I think, you know, we believe that cyberspace can be secure and resilient, right? We're never going to eliminate every risk of cyber attack. It's just, again, we'd love to. There's no magic that allows us to do that. I think, but we can increase our resilience to the point that the attacks don't have the operational or financial impacts and consequences that they do today. I think that we can raise the cost, time, and complexity of what is a successful attack, that it makes the ROI not worth it, right, for those malicious actors out there, whether nation state or otherwise. And how do we do that collaboratively? So I think that we can do that together. I think a lot of it is continuing to build and evolve the relationships. I think it's, and to me, the relationship isn't just kind of the Rolodex, right? But how do we actually understand the programs? How do we understand the needs? How do we understand the risks that individuals are facing and organizations are facing? And then how do we have that same kind of idea on risk, right? So we can do some analysis here at the federal government level and drive kind of what we think is of highest risk, but we don't know what's highest risk in your city, right? That you may have on a different kind of elevation of risk based on factors that we're just not aware of, right? So how do we do that in a collaborative way? How do we look at risk at all levels, right? Things are of national significance may not be of regional significance or of local significance, and vice versa. You know, the example I've always used is a hospital, right? Is any single hospital on the scale of national risk significant nationally, right? Versus the impact of a hospital on a local jurisdiction is massive, right? So how do we account for that kind of shifting, that scale, and how do we incorporate that? And the only way to do that successfully is in collaboration with our partners. So I think that we can get there from here. I think that we need to continue to build the relationships more closely, strongly. I think we need to look at how do we leverage technology more effectively between federal, state, and local partners, right? I mean, the .gov is just one example of this, but how do we identify ways that we can get kind of such a, you know, more bang for the buck, right? How do we leverage costs and systems and capabilities to get more effective utilization across the nation so that we can strengthen, our defenses together as we continue ahead? So I'm really happy, excited to be here at this time and day and to look at where we were 10 years ago, and where we are today is amazing. And I'm excited to see where we are 10 years from now. I think it's going to be significantly different. I think, you know, in addition to obviously the threats and the vulnerabilities changing, the technology is going to change, right? Our capabilities and our technologies 10 years from now are going to be so different than where they are today. So I'm excited to kind of watch that. And I think, again, kind of doing that hand in hand, we can ensure that our defensive posture is continuing to evolve along with our technological innovation as we continue forward.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of what you said aligns very closely with the mission and the objectives of the Coalition of City CISOs around resiliency around governments, threat sharing at the local level, and also both across local governments and then up through state and federal agencies as well, as well as educating our elected officials and why cyber is really important, and so that they're aware that cyber is something that they should be knowledgeable about prior to an actual incident that could potentially cripple your municipality. So these are exciting things to hear. I'm glad that what we're seeing is on point with what CISA's future objectives look to be.
Last question for today, because we appreciate the time you've taken with us. You mentioned your experiences in healthcare, in local government. Can you talk to us about maybe some examples or in your diverse background that prepared you for this national level role in CISA, really leading the partnership in setting a division maybe for the next 10 years?
Great question. So I think a lot of it is just perspective, right? I think it's having sat in the seats of the private sector, state and local governments, federal governments, and my time at the White House to understand what those different needs are, what the different perspectives are, right? Having been in the private sector as well, I've been in the fights where the cyber and physical security folks are fighting with the CEO, right, about risk and who's at greater risk, where do we need to make these investments? And I've also seen what those CEOs have been armed with information-wise to guide their decision-making. And in the past, it has not been a lot, right? So how do we strengthen that? I think on the city side, when I was in city government, it was a similar battle, right, between the IT and the physical folks. But the challenges and the perspectives at the city level was very different than at the state level, right? So I think that looking at all of those different needs, the requirements, the perspectives, being able to advocate for each of those from their nuanced positions, I think has been extremely valuable. Having been a federal partner of CISA and understanding kind of how that relationship works, where you know you want to meet help CISA meet its needs of and its wants of increasing resilience across cybersecurity and infrastructure security, but also having your own boss that you work for, and how do you make sure that you're meeting his or her needs as they continue to grow? And then looking at the private sector, and even in the private sector, looking at working in organizations where there's a definitive ROI on investment, right? You look at healthcare, where the impact of a cyber attack is quantifiable, right? There's a definitive risk to the institution. There's obviously the potential for patient care risk, a lot of those types of things that you can quantify that make that investment different, right? Than something, say, in the professional services side, where there isn't that kind of direct linkage to ROI. But how do you still make that argument? And how do you still ensure that you're doing the right things that you need to do to increase that security posture? And so I think that having those varied perspectives and now having the opportunity, decades later to come into CISA and having the honor of being in this role and working with this team on the inside is to kind of represent those viewpoints as we look at our programs, as we look at the evolution of our programs, as we continue ahead, and recognizing that, you know, we need to protect obviously the federal executive branch, but that a lot outside of that, everything is happening at the local level, right? Everything is happening within private industry, within their organizations. So how do we leverage that partnership? How do we leverage our activities in a way that uses risk as our driver to help guide our decisions and how we provide that support and how we work collaboratively as we move ahead? It's critical. It has to be done together. It can't be done, you know, just inside the Beltway. So I think that I've been lucky enough to have had these experiences over the years, you know, where that's helped kind of guide my thinking, my thought into, I mean, everything from information sharing and how information sharing drives decisions and informs decisions, to our products, to our engagements, to what we consider success as we look at measures and metrics of success. All of that background has kind of, you know, prepared me for this role as we look at kind of tackling the massive challenges we have today and what will only be more challenges in the coming years.
Thank you, Deputy Director Ranjan. We really appreciate your time today. And we share the vision. We're hoping that this is a great start to more partnership and more collaboration in CISA and the local level cybersecurity leaders.
Thanks for having me here today. It's been an honor to meet with all of you and to talk through these important efforts. I'm really hoping to, as we get past this COVID phase, to actually get out there more and be able to visit with many of you throughout the nation and have that opportunity to engage directly and making sure that getting that feedback on how we can better our programs and continually improve to meet your needs.
Thank you for listening to our RSA Public Sector Day podcast. If you would like more information on how we can assist your organization with cybersecurity needs, please visit www.carisoft.com/cybersecurity or email us at rsa@carisoft.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.